Starry, starry night. Paint your palette blue and gray.
I wasn't able to stay up to watch the partial eclipse of the sun last night. Did you see it? And another question for you this hour. Why did you want to see it? Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Monday, May 21st. We are going to talk about the solar eclipse and the spectacular show that people in the western United States got to experience, and when we might be able to experience something as remarkable here. And we will welcome your questions about all things stargazing for our stargazing expert at 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Bob Bonader. He's the director of the Daniel M. Soroff Planetarium at the Milwaukee Public Museum. Good morning.
Good morning.
I understand you held an eclipse viewing event last night. Any luck?
Oh, we had great luck. We were so blessed. The skies cleared up, and we had a couple hundred people, and they just enjoyed an incredible show of the moon and sun.
Well, what did they see?
Well, the moon, starting a little after 7 o'clock, started crossing the face of the sun on the lower right, and it kept doing that, taking more and more of the sun away, right until sunset, about 10 after 8.
Well, that's great. I know that I saw on Facebook some Madison friends who were really kind of grumpy because just at sunset, apparently, the clouds came in and just obscured their vision of the eclipse.
Oh, that's too bad. Yeah, I looked at the forecast all day yesterday, and it was, you know, we had a rain shower at 6:30, and I thought, oh, there's no way we're going to see this. And miraculously, the skies cleared, and we had a great show in the sky.
Now, the eastern part of the United States pretty much missed out entirely on this as the sun set before the eclipse?
Right. Starting from a line about Ohio or so to the west, people would see it better and better as they moved to the west. And if you were actually in the southwest, you would see the moon cover the sun, but not completely, because the moon was a little further away in its orbit. It's an elliptical orbit, kind of oval-shaped, and that means the moon was a little smaller than usual. So when it covered the sun, it left a ring around it, and a lot of people called it a ring of fire. There's some great shots on the internet this morning of that occurrence, again, in the southwest.
Yeah, and I did post some of those on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. It was really spectacular looking. How big a deal? Go ahead.
Oh, I sent your producer a picture from the eclipse last night, a nice picture from Milwaukee through the trees, so maybe you can post that too. It's a beautiful picture of what happened here last night.
Oh, will do. No, I wasn't aware of that, so we'll definitely pull that and put that up on Facebook and on our website too. That's great. So this was a pretty big deal too. It looked as though people were watching this all over the world.
Oh, yes. It started over in Asia, right, in Hong Kong in the morning, and then it raced across the Pacific Ocean and then landed in the United States in Northern California. So, yeah, eclipses are kind of a big deal. They only happen if you don't move. They happen maybe every 3-4 years, and they're just kind of a neat celestial show. I mean, our two neighbors, the moon and the sun, the two most important things in the sky, get together for a little dance, if you call it, and it's just a way to connect with something a little bigger than ourselves.
And this was called an annular eclipse?
Annular eclipse. It's a Latin word for annulus, which means ring, and that's going back to the ring of fire. So it's not a total eclipse because the moon is too small, but it's an annular eclipse, right?
So why do you suppose astronomical events like this fascinate us so much?
Well, the sky's half our horizon. I mean, we're connected to it. And the heavens, we love the clockwork of the heavens that we're able to predict these things so exactly. And we're always fascinated by things out there in space bigger than us, and we want to understand them. So people like to see an eclipse, and besides that, they're just beautiful to look at, stunning to the eye.
When is the next big solar eclipse?
Well, the next big one is August 21st, 2017, so that's a little over 5 years from now, and we're trying to get people to mark their calendars because it's going to be about 90% here in Milwaukee. There'll even be some slight darkening here, but not too much. We encourage people, if they can, to travel to southern Illinois or anywhere on a narrow path from Oregon to South Carolina. And that's going to be a total solar eclipse. That's when it gets dark out, some of the bright stars and planets pop out, and that is a stunning, stunning event. And if people have never seen a total solar eclipse, I mean, that's the big one. You want to experience one of those because it is so breathtaking. As you can see, I'm fumbling for words. It's they're harder to describe. It's just such an incredible show.
I remember in grade school, one of those where we did a big project and you made the little box so you could, you know, see the sun on the sidewalk, that sort of thing, because you don't want to be looking at this thing.
No, no, but during the total phase, anytime you have a partial solar eclipse, when the moon is covering even 99% of the sun, it's you need to watch the sun safely with eye protection or through a pinhole like you were describing. But when it's a total solar eclipse, when the moon completely covers the sun, then you can look at it with your eyes, and that again, that is just fascinating.
Well, we have Teresa on Facebook writes, "We saw the eclipse on the bluffs. We caught it in glances and out of the corner of our eye. It was really cool." She is in the in western Wisconsin.
Western Wisconsin. Yeah. That's great. That's wonderful. Yeah, anyone who had a higher elevation, you know, would see it, the eclipse last night, more and more to the sunset. And if they had any binoculars or, you know, it would just been incredible. So that's good for her. That's great.
And here is Alice in Two Harbors, Minnesota. Hi, Alice.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call here. And we didn't think we'd see it because we had, you know, some pretty good rain. We're north of Duluth. And right at 8 o'clock, the sky lifted, and I told my husband, let's go. And we went out to a little valley just down the road from us, and we got a spectacular view because it was so low. It made this beautiful golden sky. And what we did, the last time I listened to you, the recommendation was you take your binoculars, and we got it focused on the sun. And then my husband held up a big white piece of cardboard, and we got an excellent view by doing that. So I think any other eclipses, the binoculars was a really good way to go. And it even picked up the little pine trees as the sun went down on the horizon. So it was spectacular. I didn't think we'd see it this far north.
Yeah, you really painted a great picture of that, Alice. Thank you so much. And why is it that you wanted to rush out there to see this, Alice?
Oh, my husband and I and our kids, we see every type of event in the sky. We just, and especially up here in the north, you can really get good you know, stargazing, moon gazing. So it's just a fun thing we've always done with our kids.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that. What about that binocular technique, Bob?
Oh, sure, exactly. You can project it through binoculars or a telescope onto, like Alice mentioned, a white cardboard, and definitely we've done that before. It's a great way to do it. Just, of course, never look through the binoculars at the eclipse or through a telescope without a proper filter on it if you're looking at it directly. But she's describing an indirect view, and it's a great way to look at it.
And I understand that we have posted your picture on Facebook, and apparently it is really, really cool, according to Bill Martens. So thank you for sharing that.
Oh, yeah, and thank Brent Lindquist. He was a gentleman there who took it through our telescope at the planetarium. So,
all right, well, check out that picture on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page, and there's other information there about the eclipse and other space stuff. And we welcome you to post a comment or a question or maybe even your own photo there. We are talking about the solar eclipse last night, and we're also going to talk about some of the other things that are coming up in the night sky. And we're welcoming your questions for our guest and your own reasons for why you like to stargaze. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, and tell us if you saw the eclipse last night too and where you saw it. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Well, it's going to be a mostly sunny day today and mild, with highs from 65 to 72 degrees. Clear tonight. And catch this, some frost in northwestern Wisconsin tonight, lows 37 to 43. And tomorrow, partly cloudy with a slight chance of storms in the northwest. Highs tomorrow will be in the 70s. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about space and the summer sky. We are talking about stargazing. We had a solar eclipse last night, and there are a lot of interesting spring and summer constellations that we can view, and some planet watching. And we're welcoming your questions for our guest, Bob Bonneder, who is director of the Daniel M. Soriff Planetarium at the Milwaukee Public Museum. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org, or post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Are you a stargazer, and why? Did you catch last night's eclipse? What was it like for you? And what are you looking forward to in the night sky? We welcome your questions and comments. We also welcome you to stay tuned. Coming up in our State Capitol Report after 7 o'clock, I'll be checking in with Wisconsin Public Radio State Government reporter Sean Johnson on the latest news about jobs numbers in Wisconsin and the upcoming recall election. And then after 7:30, we'll be kicking off a series of candidate forums. We are going to be talking with most of the candidates running for State Senate in the recall elections. We'll start off with Terry Virgil, Libertarian candidate for the 13th Senate District recall election. That's after 7:30 this morning. And again, we are talking about stargazing with our guest this hour, and we'll get to the phones in just a moment. But Bob, I understand a really interesting event is coming up on June 5th. Tell us what's going to happen then.
Yes, on June 5th, Venus is going to cross the face of the sun for the last time in 105 years.
Wow.
It's going to look like a little black dot crossing the sun. Here in Wisconsin, we're going to get to see about 3 hours of it. It's just kind of a cool, very rare event. And by the way, no connection to the election that night.
I know, I was going to say, it's the same day as the recall election. But so this is the last time in 105 years. Wow, so this is really rare.
Yeah, they come in pairs. There was one 8 years ago, some listeners might recall. But before that, it was 1882. So then we have two, and then it'll be another over 100 years. And it's just kind of a fascinating thing. And long ago, previous, they call them transits, transit of Venus. Astronomers or people would go out on their ships in the 18th and 19th century, and they would try to observe it in two different locations. And then they'd write down their times exactly, how long it took, and then they use a thing called parallax and a little geometry, and you could end up calculating the distance from the Earth to the sun exactly. And that's what, you know, people just wanted to know that. It was kind of a competition thing going on, a space race, if you will. People wanted to know that magical distance from the Earth to the sun, which today most of us know is about 93 million miles.
And I saw a blog posting by Astro Bob. Is that you?
No, that's not me.
I don't know. Anyway, Astro Bob says that that we can learn a lot or put a lot of information down about this this event, Venus crossing the sun, for future research purposes. What could we learn by this event that's coming up on June 5th?
Well, I mean, again, we can calculate the distance. Again, we can also figure a little bit about the sun's atmosphere, its corona as it comes in. That's always important to study our star. But overall, it's not a major research thing. I mean, NASA pays attention to it only in kind of public outreach and things like that. It's not a huge scientific research anymore. Kind of the same thing with eclipses. I mean, we have telescopes in space. I mean, if you go to websites like the Solar Dynamics Observatory and Stereo, you can just see these unbelievable images of the sun with these telescopes that we put into space, and there is where we get the excellent research on our star.
Yeah, so how do we see this on June 5th?
How do we say it? Again, you'll need protection. It's like an eclipse, but there will be no darkening, and Venus is way too small. So we have eclipse glasses just for a couple of dollars that we sell at the museum gift shop, and you could use the indirect methods that Alice and Two Harbors was talking about and you were talking about with the pinhole projection. You can do that. We're going to have an event at the public library on the rooftop with a bunch of telescopes on top and around the building to see it if folks want to see it a little bigger. But again, if you use telescopes, never look directly through the telescope. Use the indirect, project the image onto something else. So people can watch it right from home.
And what you end up
protecting,
what you see is the big, whatever, globe of the sun, and then a little black dot and that's Venus.
Yeah, that's almost like that old Police song, "A Little Black Spot on the Sun Today," and that's what it's going to look like. And people can look up pictures from 2004, but it doesn't overly take your breath away, but it's just kind of neat to see it. I mean, here's this other planet about the same. Some people call it our sister planet because it's about the same size as planet Earth, but the Venus is a much different world. It has 900 degree temperatures. And it's got sulfuric acid in its atmosphere, so it's not a very, hospitable place. But it's just a neat natural show.
Wow! And I thought it was hot on Saturday at the Brewers game.
So, yeah, 900 is hot enough to melt you, me, and the Wicked Witch of the West. It's a hot place.
Barney in Burlington joins us. Good morning.
What are you talking about right now?
Hey, Barney, you're on the air.
Yeah. Hey. Thank you for letting me on. I went to Baja, California in 1991, way down there. It's just a rinky-dink road to go like 500 to 1,000 miles to go to see it. It was fantastic. The people that live there wouldn't look at it. It's against their superstition of some kind. But then
And what were you looking at exactly, Barney?
That was at the eclipse. It was like 6-minute eclipse of the sun way down there. A total, which was fantastic. You had to go down to California, Baja, and it's very, the road is dangerous. The people were fine. But in relation to that, about 12 years ago, I looked at I went up on my roof here in Burlington, Wisconsin, to see the transit of Venus across the sun there. And I think that was even more amazing because it was early in the morning as the sun got up, and I didn't need glasses or anything. I wouldn't recommend this, but for about 15 minutes when the sun comes up, you can look directly at it, and you can just watch the Venus, the big dot going across the sun there, so...
All right, and you're still seeing okay today, Barney.
Perfect.
Right.
So when it goes across this time, I think as if it's a clear sky, and everybody looks at the sun as it's in that lower stage there, cutting through the super thick atmosphere. And I wouldn't recommend it if you don't know what you're doing. But
And it sounds Barney was doing this some years ago during a sun. Was it a sunrise that you said you did this at, Barney?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That was early in the morning, where this will be later in the afternoon night there. So, yeah, I don't know how that's going to work. It might almost have to use welding glasses or.
Yeah. So, like Bob, any comment on that?
Oh, it brings up an excellent point. I mean, naturally, we look at sunsets. We can do that because, as Barney mentioned, you're looking through 40 times more air. Mm-hmm. So that filters down the sun, and, sunsets, we naturally look at it. It's okay. It doesn't hurt our eye. What we always suggest is never override your pain mechanism. When you look at the sun, it hurts. We look away. You naturally do that. So never force yourself to see anything. So, but yeah, on the Venus transit coming up on June 5th, if it's late in the day and the sun is getting very low towards sunset, yes, you can look at it naturally, and you will see the little black dot in Venus with just your eyes.
I can imagine, Barney mentioned when he saw a total eclipse in 1991 in Baja California, he said the native people were afraid of this or had superstitions about this. I suppose that must have been pretty freaky the first times that people saw something like this.
Yes, it's, they naturally really, I mean, it's hard for us to think of it this way, but they really, really thought the world was coming to an end.
Mm-hmm.
They really did. I mean, think about it. You have this beautiful sun during the day, and it's getting dark when it's not supposed to. It is a very eerie feeling. The first one I saw, I really connected to our ancestors in that sense. Even though I knew what was going on, you know, I knew everything, the times, the exact thing, I still felt this eerie feeling that something is wrong. Something is very wrong with the world. And you can really understand why people thought that. I mean, they had all these superstitions. Different cultures described it in different ways, all very elaborate and creative. But they really did think the world was going to end.
Well, we are not going to end this conversation just yet. We are going to check news, and then we'll be back talking about all sorts of different astronomical events, including the Venus transit that is coming up on June the 5th, talking some about last night's partial eclipse of the sun that we saw in Wisconsin. And there's also another big total eclipse of the sun, but that's not until August 21st, 2017. So we welcome your thoughts, your questions, your observations about the night sky. For our guest, Bob Bonneter, who is director of the Planetarium at the Milwaukee Public Museum. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk at WPR.org.
Starry, starry night, paint your palette blue and gray.
So did you see the partial eclipse of the sun last night? Do you like to stargaze? Do you have any questions about viewing constellations and planets? Would you like to know some of the upcoming events that we can see in our night sky? Call in and ask our expert, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk at WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 6:37 on this Monday, May 21st. Our guest is Bob Bonneter. He is director of the Daniel M. Soroth Planetarium at the Milwaukee Public Museum. He hosted a solar eclipse watching party last night, and he says it was a spectacular view, and we have posted one of the photos of the partial solar eclipse last night on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page if you'd like to check that out. And if you'd like to post a question or your own photos, we'd welcome that as well. Lewis in La Crosse called in through the news, and he said that there is an international space satellite that will be visible for the next week or two. He says that it looks like a star, but it shoots across the sky. He says he saw it at around 5 this morning from right in the city, shortly before sunrise. It's really something to see because it sort of pops out of nowhere, moves across the sky for a couple of minutes, and then it disappears. What can you tell us about that, Bob?
Oh, yeah, he's talking about the International Space Station. Yeah, many times you can see it. It's a satellite in space that orbits the Earth every hour and a half, so it's trucking about 5 miles a second. And, yeah, it takes about 2-3 minutes, sometimes 4 minutes, to cross the sky, and it looks like a very bright star just gliding across. And it's kind of neat to think that 16 different countries put that up there, and there's astronauts there right now, and we're trying to launch a spaceship up there, a cargo ship. People may have heard SpaceX. It's the first private space company is going to launch a cargo ship up there, but it was canceled on Saturday, but they hope to relaunch it soon.
So we don't need any special equipment to see this?
No, and if viewers want to see satellites in space, there's a website called heavens-above.com. Or just Google Heavens Above, and if you just enter your city, it will tell you exactly when and where to look for not only the space station, but other satellites. You can actually see the Hubble Space Telescope up there. It's not as bright as the space station, but you can see all kinds of satellites.
Well, very cool. What was the name of that website again? We'll post that as well.
Heavens Above, heavens-above.com.
Mm-hmm. Well, that sounds really good. So are there any other, we talked a little bit about the Venus transit that's going to be happening on June the 5th. Oh. Venus has really been doing has been really putting on a show all over the place recently, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah, you're going right where I was going to go. Yeah, you can still see Venus in the sky. Yeah, we could see it last night after the eclipse. Venus is so bright, you can see it during the daytime. And it's still in the western sky. It's getting a little lower each night. And it obviously will cross the sun on June 5th. But people can watch it, having just had this eclipse. Now, remember, people can start seeing a nice crescent moon, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to see some nice crescent moons in the sky. And coming up on Thursday, the moon will be right next door to Venus. So people get a nice pairing there. And so Venus is wonderful to look at. It's the number one reported UFO. It's so bright.
It was amazing. Just a couple of weeks ago, I think it was Venus. It was the moon, the Venus, and another planet that made a real. I don't remember now what the other planet was. If it was Mars,
Jupiter. Jupiter, which is the second brightest planet, and yeah, they were all together in March, and it was a lovely show.
So what other, I don't know, are there any other planets we should be keeping an eye on these days?
Oh, sure. If folks look almost like due south after sunset, about 9 o'clock, 9:30, depending where you are, and you'll see Mars up about halfway up the sky in the constellation of Leo the Lion. And Mars looks like a reddish-looking star, and it's kind of strange to think that Mars is red in the sky for the same reason our blood is red.
Why?
It's oxygen and iron mixing.
Oh.
And you get the rust. And so Mars has a lot of iron in the soil that oxidizes, gets rusty. Same thing with our blood.
Very cool. Now, I'm a Leo, according to the Zodiac. I'd like to see this Leo constellation. What do I look for that?
Leo is a bright constellation. You can see it amongst the city lights fairly good. It looks like its nickname is a backwards question mark.
Okay.
Or a sickle. And Mars will be just to the left of that sickle. And then there's a little triangle to the left of Mars, and that's just the back end and the tip of the tail of Leo. Constellations, remember, take up a bit of imagination, and people see different things just like they do clouds in the sky. But long ago, it was Leo the Lion.
Yeah, that's there are we had a recently a Wisconsin Life episode. That's an audio essay a series that we run on Wisconsin Public Radio, and it was someone who was talking about the spectacular spring constellations that you're able to view this time of year. Is this an especially, I don't know, are there a lot of constellations that we see this time of year?
Well, they're always changing on a yearly cycle due to our orbit, our planet around the sun, and the spring sky offers a great show. The winter sky is actually the brightest, has the brightest constellations with Orion the Hunter. A lot of folks recognize his belt going across the sky, and the two dog stars are very bright. Spring sky is not bad. It's got Leo, of course, as we mentioned. The Big Dipper people can find almost directly overhead this time of year. If you look almost straight up, you'll see Dipper. And if you arc off the Dipper's handle, it's kind of curved like an arc, you'll arc to the summer sky's brightest star, and that's a star called Arcturus. And the trick is follow the arc to Arcturus.
We are talking with Bob Bonneder. He is director of the Daniel M. Soroff Planetarium at the Milwaukee Public Museum. We're talking about all things related to stargazing, and we're welcoming your eyewitness reports of the partial solar eclipse last night, or any questions you have about viewing constellations and the planets. And we're also wondering if you are a stargazer and why you are a stargazer. What do you love about this? 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. We just have Bob with us for another 5 or 6 minutes or so before our Monday morning wake-up call. So if you have a report or a question, we'd love to hear it now. What are some of the stargazing tools that we should have on hand, Bob Bonneder, if we want to be catching any of these night sky events?
Oh, the number one tool you need is curiosity.
Mm-hmm.
And just head out. And other, just try to find a dark sky. We always like to tell folks at the planetarium when they come and see our beautiful, you know, simulated sky is to just make a night of it. You know, do a nighttime picnic, right? Just, you know, get some friends, family, load up the picnic basket, get the lawn chairs or a blanket, bug spray too as the bugs start to come out, and get far away from the city lights. And just make a night of it and view the stars. People will love it. They'll see a shooting star or two. They'll see satellites going across the sky. It's a great way to spend a night a little differently, you know. Get out of the house and enjoy the stars.
I think that sounds wonderful. Those city lights do interfere, don't they?
Yeah, they really do. It's, you know, the sky doesn't have the captivation. You know, it doesn't really pull us in or as it used to. Because if you think of our ancestors, you know, no city lights, no television, no computers, and they, when night would fall and it would be a clear sky, they would look up at, you know, all these jewels above them, and they would connect with their stories and legends. And also, it was a very practical place. It was their calendar. It was their clock, and it was literally heaven to them. So it's a way not only to connect today, getting away from the city lights, but just connect to our ancestors, too.
Yeah. Do you take a star map outside with you?
Oh, yeah. Well, I sometimes, I know the sky pretty good.
Yeah. But should an amateur like me bring a star map with me?
Yeah, bring a star map, and also bring a, you know, if you have really dark skies, you'll need a flashlight to read the map, right? And make sure you take your flashlight and stop it down or put some, like, masking tape over it or a red gel so you keep your night vision as you look at the map and then look up at the night sky.
Oh, what a great tip. Lynn in Menominee Falls joins us now. Hi, Lynn.
Good morning. Say, I have a telescope that I've used only once, and we looked at the moon, and it was so very fun. But that thing about looking at a star, I just don't even, I haven't read any book about how to use this telescope. How do I start, really?
Well, the best thing to do, if you have a telescope and you're not too familiar with it, is look up your local astronomy club. Most cities have them, even smaller cities are not too far, and they generally have a star party every couple times a month,
mm-hmm.
and just take your telescope to their star party. It's a free event. They don't charge.
Yeah.
And those are the people who know telescopes, and they will tell you how to use it.
Very good.
All right. Well, happy stargazing, Lynn. Thanks for the call. Carla in Madison is with us now. Hi, Carla.
Good morning.
Morning.
I like your idea of making a night of it. The last 10 years, I've been a camp counselor, and one of the things we like to do when we're out at night is to a bunch of us go and look at the stars. And last year what we did is we took our Google app, I think it's called Google Sky, to try to figure out what the different constellations are, and I was wondering what your thoughts are about that.
Oh, Google Sky is great. It's a great application to use to stargaze, and some people, you know, these smartphones, they can just, some of them, you can just point your smartphone toward the sky, and it will tell you what you're looking at. Because it has the GPS built in and everything.
Wow, so, technology.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Well, good. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much, Carla. So you mentioned that after the Venus transit that that we are going to get a show from Mars. I understand Saturn's also going to be putting on a show in the summer?
Yeah, Saturn is out right now. It's in the constellation of Spica, or Virgo, excuse me, right next door to the bright star Spica. And folks can look for the moon passing that around the full moon on June 4th. And I want to mention the moon, the first quarter moon coming up on May 29th, a week from Tuesday, will be right next to Mars. So, but Saturn is really cool through a telescope because even a modest telescope, just about 4 or 5 inches in diameter, you can see the rings with your own eyes, and that's a treat.
You know, it might be silly, but Saturn is one of my. I think it's my favorite planet because it's so, those rings are so cool. Or maybe it would be the red spot on Jupiter. I'm not sure. What about other constellations that we might be able to see besides you mentioned Leo and what else is in the summer?
The summer triangle is a great sign of summer. It's not a constellation per se. It's just three very bright stars, but they really stand out. And the eastern sky, people can see in this time of year, they're rising right about 9, 10 o'clock. And that's each bright star has its own constellation. Probably one of the best ones is Cygnus the Swan, though people love to call it the Northern Cross. And it looks like a sword or a cross or a swan in the night sky. And that one is nice because you can see it from city lights. You can find it.
Any meteor showers coming up?
Oh, the Perseids in August. So if people are wanting to make a night out of it, do it around August 11th or 12th. That's when the planet Earth plows through this debris field left over by a comet, and we get a bunch of shooting stars, and that's fun. And these are just shooting stars are really called meteors. They're little rocks that burn up as they plow through the atmosphere.
Boy, so much. Anything else that we haven't talked about that we ought to look up to try to see?
Oh, I don't know. Just again, if you can get away from the city lights, or if you can't, come down to the planetarium. I mean, we have a great sky. There's no bugs at the planetarium, and we'll show you what to look for. That's a wonderful thing to do. We're going to land a spaceship on Mars again, a rover about the size of a small car. That's called Curiosity, so cross your fingers. Hopefully that will go well. That will happen in early August. So that will be big news from space, and just keep looking up.
And one more time, if we want to see the Venus transit, you have an event at the planetarium?
Yeah, we're going to be hosting the event next door at the public library. Their roof is a little higher and a little better access, so we're going to be atop the Milwaukee Public Library, and we're going to be, because we want to see it all the way to sunset. That's why we're trying to get elevation, because it starts a little after 5 o'clock, and we'll go all the way to sunset about 8:30 here in Milwaukee. The folks in the western part of the state, the sunset will be a little before 9 o'clock. And just see Venus cross the face of the sun for the last time in 105 years and watch it safely.
And this is on June 5th.
June 5th, correct.
All right. Well, this has been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me, Joy. It's great.
Bob Bonader is director of the planetarium at the Milwaukee Public Museum, talking with us about last night's partial solar eclipse and other noteworthy things in the night sky in the spring and summer. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. It's time for our Monday morning wake-up call, and today the wake-up call comes from the Department of Natural Resources about ATV safety. There have been 3 deaths recently of people in Wisconsin who were riding on ATVs, or all-terrain vehicles, 2 adults and 1 child. And our guest says this signals a need to review ATV safety tips. Our guest is Gary Eddy, ATV administrator for the Bureau of Law Enforcement at the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Good morning.
Good morning.
Are these 3 recent fatalities in about a month's time unusual for Wisconsin?
Well, unfortunately not. I mean, our seasons definitely vary, and, you know, we've experienced rough starts to the season like this before.
Yeah. How dangerous is it to ride an ATV?
Well, an ATV is about like any other piece of machinery out there. It's as dangerous as the operator lets it be. You know, there's certain things you need to prepare for before riding an ATV, and one of the things is just learning about the machine itself and the safe operation.
Yeah. I remember way back when, they used to be, I thought they were just 3-wheelers, and now they're 4-wheelers, and that was done for safety reasons?
Right. Yeah, you know, a lot of things are looked at, obviously, from the federal level, and that's one of the things that was nipped in the bud right away, is the 3-wheeled vehicles, obviously, were a little unstable just due to their design. And, you know, they were quickly stopped production on those machines. But you still see a few of those out there. They are grandfathered in.
Yeah. Now, don't riders, at least young riders, have to take safety classes before they can ride an ATV?
Absolutely. Any youth, or actually it gets up in the older age folks, too, but minimum age 12, and then those born on or after January 1st, 1988, are required to complete an ATV safety course. So it more or less is kind of like an ATV driver's license for a lot of the older folks out there now.
Yeah. So adults should or must take these too?
Well, they should. Mm-hmm. You know, anybody born before January 1st, 1988 is not mandated to complete that course, but you know, as always, we encourage everyone, if they're not familiar with these, get the basic good head start, and that is always through completion of an ATV safety course. And we also encourage the parents to go right along and take that course with their children. And really, that's the only way they can reinforce what the child is being taught.
Yeah. Other tips for ATV safety?
Oh, certainly. I mean, just looking at our accident statistics over the years, the one that always jumps out at you is just using a helmet. Unfortunately, we have a majority of our crashes out there involve folks that aren't wearing a helmet. They're not using the basic, equipment and protect themselves. And we see some of these accidents that are, low speed, very survivable. And unfortunately, the person, either suffered a traumatic brain injury or they didn't survive the crash at all, just for the mere fact they didn't wear a helmet.
Oh, that's very sad. And are most of these accidents, I don't know if you can categorize them, but are they typically the ATV somehow rolling over or tipping over?
Right, yeah. A lot of rollovers, a lot of collisions with fixed objects. And right there, that tells you, one of the other factors, which is people operating at a speed that's either too fast for the conditions or too fast for their experience level. Certainly, we have varying levels of experience out there from children that have been involved with ATV racing since a very young age, and they're going to have a very different experience level once they get a little bit older versus, somebody that purchased an ATV for the first time and they're very new to it. Certainly those people cannot be operating at equal speeds out there when they're either on a trail or whatever the situation is. So, and the other thing is that ATVs have a fairly high center of gravity and they're on four low pressure kind of bouncy tires. And that's not really a good combination. If you're not aware of the dynamics of that machine, it could easily catch you off guard. And that results in some of our rollovers out there.
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, these three fatalities in Wisconsin occurred on private property. And what does that tell you?
Well, one thing we continually see on private property is, people just, obviously, they treat ATV operation on their own property a lot differently than they would if they were out on a public trail somewhere. They kind of let their guard down. They don't really think about safety that much because they're in the comfort of really their own backyard. And things like, proper safety equipment doesn't come into play. People usually operate at higher speeds because it's an area familiar to them. And then they start doing things like, taking risks or stunt riding or what have you. And same goes with parents is they let their guard down as far as safety with their children. So they may not always control the keys to those vehicles or they treat them, unfortunately, treat them like toys and they occupy their children's time. Really, they need the highest level of supervision, even more so on private property, because that's when the kids tend to get more trouble.
And we have less than 30 seconds. It should go without saying, but no drugs or alcohol, but apparently that's involved in 40% of the ATV accidents or fatalities?
Right, yep. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, alcohol is always up there as one of the higher factors, and sometimes well over 50% of our fatalities.
Is there a website for more information or maybe how to get one of these ATV safety classes?
Absolutely. Just go to the general DNR website and go ahead and just enter ATV safety into the search engine and it'll take you right to our webpage.
Thank you so much for being with us. Gary Eddy is the ATV administrator for the DNR.